That Chicago stuff, man. The deep dish, no way. I've been here for 15 years. It's just not my thing.
Yeah, you know, I have an admission too. I am from Cincinnati, and I don't really
don't even
eat
say
Skyline.
It. Don't say it.
Skyline chili.
I love you. Really, you don't? I love Skyline.
I mean, I like how it tastes. I just don't like how it makes me feel.
We did it. We're finally here. We made it through 1 week of real fantasy football. And of course, all of us here at Fantasy Outliers and all of our listeners have won every game in all of their leagues. And we're just ready to continue to dominate. So welcome to Fantasy Outliers, the podcast brought to you by fantasyoutliers.com. This is Dave.
This is Chris.
Chris, and it's true, right? You won fantasy football this weekend, right?
I won everything. I had no errors at all.
No errors. Like in no, baseball.
wrong sport.
Yeah.
I was 3-1. So, you know, decent.
Well, I was unfortunately not a great week for the home team, the Harbingers of Dooms. I was 1-2 in my three leagues this week. And you know, it's tough. But anyway, so welcome to the podcast. We are going to do a little bit of, you know, we're into the regular fantasy football season now, so we're going to talk about stuff that can help you on a week over week basis here. And we, you know, as is our Fantasy Outliers kind of outlook on life, we have a couple of kind of big picture topics to talk with you about that can help you manage your team as you move from thinking about drafts into thinking about winning every week this year. So basically, Chris and I are going to do a little bit of a recap of week one. We're going to talk about a little bit of, you know, Fantasy Outliers players that we saw, just some initial impressions. All of that's anecdotal, but it's still fun. Then we're going to talk about waiver wire pickups. And after that, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about roster management from here out. So Chris, week one, you said you went 3-1. What was your impression of the teams that you put together? What did you feel good about? Super small sample size, but after watching some real football, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where if you make a bunch of picks, some of them are going to like, you're going to see a couple of them and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And you're going to see a couple of them and you're going to be like, whoa, this is all wrong. But just yeah. Even if it's just random. So, I don't know.
So like a good data scientist, Chris is saying, I am not prepared to levy any kind of analysis on such a small sample size.
And especially because week one can be kind of an atypical week, right?
Yeah.
We've already talked about that. And yeah, so I don't want to get into like, oh, well, I said that this guy was going to be good or I was wrong about that guy or I don't know. I guess that's kind of boring for a podcast, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I will say that one thing that struck me as being kind of weird in this week one is just it felt like down is up, up is down, left is right a little bit just with the ways that the actual games played out this weekend. I mean, I watched the Saints game last night and was just like, what is happening in this world? I mean, I know that the Saints defense is bad. I didn't expect them to make Sam Bradford look like, you know, a capable
like Troy Aikman.
Yeah, I said Troy Aikman earlier on our chat. That might be overstating a little bit, but he did look like a competent, let's say he looks better than a Jay Cutler type, which is you know, pretty good, especially if you're Sam Bradford. And then, you know, I think that as I watched scores come in, I kind of had forgotten about the just the incessant like anxiety of checking your fantasy stats like every, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes, maybe more, having the app open while you're actually watching all the replays go by, just so you know exactly what's going on all the time. I don't think that's going to last too long because I don't think my family's going to put up with it at this point. But you know, we're fully plugged back into fantasy football at this point, no doubt about that.
You gotta kind of have to act like you're sending an email or something. Like,
you know what?
It's just for work.
You know what? My wife would actually much prefer that I was looking at fantasy football to sending work email on the weekends.
I get
majorly busted for work stuff on the weekends. And yeah, she's like, you better not be working. I'm like, no, I'm just chatting to somebody on the internet for no reason. So I think a couple of little things that I thought about when I was watching too is like, I wouldn't lose the faith about, like, you know, the Patriots quite yet. That was an interesting way to open the season. I don't think that's going to be real. Same thing with the Saints kind of getting destroyed by people. I think that it's just going to be a lot of offense all the time there because their defense is just still bad. It's still bad. And, the Bears are still a disappointment and managed to take a game that was really boring, managed to somehow take out both of my fantasy players that I had on Atlanta in Devonta Freeman and Julio Jones and make them put up less than optimal performances and still lose when they had the game put right in front of them on the last set of downs.
You're not bitter or anything though.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, it's better than watching my beloved Jay Cutler, I guess. So let's talk about the one thing that's on everybody's mind as they get kind of done with week one, when they realize the smoke clears and they realize that they need to make some fixes to their lineup. It's time to go to the waiver wire.
So you wrote an article on Medium called Week Two Waiver Wire Reactions, where you basically go through common pickups that are suggested and your take on them. Why don't you kind of walk us through that?
Yeah, and I think that there's what I wanted to say was, we, you know, there are people out there who are much better at mining who that big waiver wire pickup is supposed to be each week. That's why we're kind of positioning what we've done, at least for now, as kind of a reaction to what's going on in the media for waiver wires. We want to try to bring in, use some of our fantasy outliers kind of analysis skills to bring some objectivity and a little bit of scale to how good these players that you're going to pick up are. So a lot of what we did was take a look at our initial season projections and adjust them based on either changes to the number of opportunities we think people are going to get per game, or potentially change a little bit the number of points we thought that people were going to get per opportunity if they really showed that it felt like maybe we had underrated them initially.
So, yeah, I mean, when coming up with these predictions, I kind of thought that the points per opportunity was a little more stable than the opportunities per game. So, like, we might not necessarily know, you know, the opportunities per game until we kind of see it play out. So that's something that we're kind of planning on adjusting throughout the season.
Yeah, there's only one player where I kind of wanted to reconsider their points per opportunity. Everything else was taking a look at the opportunities per game metric and seeing how they scale up. Because the idea there is, hey, if we give somebody extra touches, where does that really put them in context with everybody else at their position? I think what's interesting is that, you know, after the first week, people are always going to be looking to replace their injured players. There's always someone big who goes down. Unfortunately, this year it was the number one pick. Now, Chris, I know you have David Johnson in a league where you and I are playing each other next week. how are you feeling about that?
Which, by the way, somehow the draft order got mixed up, and I ended up with the number one spot. So,
yeah,
that's
hashtag conspiracy.
Yeah,
hashtag fake draft. Well, you know, it didn't work out for the bad guys this time. I mean, it's really unfortunate, actually, because I really hate seeing people lose their first round. I mean, first off, I really hate seeing somebody get injured in football. It's not something I ever want to see happen when we're watching the game.
Good. That's good.
Yeah. You're not a psychopath. We'll start there. And then The second thing is, you know, it is sad when you know players who maybe are a little bit, you know, casual or trying to learn or whatever, and they get really shaken by the fact that they lost an early draft pick to injury. And it's, unfortunately, it's part of the game, and managing around that is the way that you really succeed over the long term.
Right.
And working the waiver wire when you can is part of that. Also, not drafting players who are actively, a detriment to your team during the draft is the other part of that. But,
this is kind of, I thought this was kind of weird. When we looked at the average total season value for the running backs taken in order, like first running back, second running back, third. Actually, the first two running backs on average returned worse total season value than the third and the fourth picks. So
right.
There's something about those first two picks that, like, historically, I don't know, they're cursed or something.
Well, come on, you are a data scientist. I don't know if curses and science go together much. It just seems like it really speaks to the volatility at the position to me.
Yeah, I guess you could say
that. Fair, or do you believe in ghosts?
I believe ghosts could exist scientifically speaking, yeah.
Do you think ghosts could injure the number one running back consistently, or?
I think that would be a pretty weird goal to have once you're
dead. It sounds like a great, like, M. Night Shyamalan movie, though, doesn't it? Like, that would be the plot of the movie, is that ghosts come back to injure football players, and it would be called, like, Fourth Down or something like that. The Fourth Down.
All right, let's move on.
Okay. So anyway, you lost David Johnson. It is terrible. You lost David Johnson. What are you thinking about doing, to kind of make up for that loss as you look at the waiver wire this week?
Well, I mean, I guess there's Andre Ellington and Kerwin Williams, if they're, you know, if you can get them, maybe Tariq Cohen from the Bears.
So let's talk about the two people who are supposed to be like the presumptive pickups for David Johnson, the swap-ins. So everybody has been talking about Kerwin Williams got most of the work once Johnson left the game. I think he got a touchdown, if I remember right. And Andre Ellington is the other kind of running back who's on the roster there. One of the first questions that we looked at when we were putting together this waiver wire column was, you know, obviously who's going to step up and kind of take the reins from the number one running back? And will they perform anywhere near at the same level that he has over the last couple of years? And the short answer, in my opinion, after doing the analysis, is probably not. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, Chris wrote an article about handcuffs on our Medium blog that is worth taking a look at if you want to see what typically happens with running backs when they get replaced. Often they come within, I think it was within 5 points, 1 point.
Well, that first week they replaced them, there's like a 1 point drop off. But right. Throughout the course of a season, it's kind of a different story.
Right. I think that what's interesting is that, you know, we kind of had some exposure to Andre Ellington in the past in particular. And Kerwin Williams is not a rookie, for as little as people may know who this player is. So if you look at the projections that we actually had in the math box from earlier this year, they really only had about it was a pretty low number points per opportunity. I think it was around 0.7 per player. We actually had them very close to each other. We also already had them projected to have 8 opportunities per game each. Unfortunately, what happens if you look at scaling up their opportunities, assuming that they both move up to 16 opportunities apiece, we get two running backs that are very close to running back 25 and running back 30. We actually project Ellington to be better overall. I'm a little bit skeptical of that just because he's actually someone who also gets injured quite frequently. And also, that's pretty high. And then Williams, we project to be right around running back 30 ultimately with the new number of opportunities per game at negative 4.56 average weekly value. So it's still somebody that you don't want to start.
So you'd basically be going from someone who's supposed to net you plus 5 points per week and David Johnson to someone who's supposed to lose you 3 to 5 points per week.
Correct.
Against running backs.
Which is brutal if you think about it that way. I mean, it's like value over replacement. Yeah. So I think that unfortunately it's really looking to me like you probably want to try to look somewhere else if you can, if you have David Johnson. You definitely want to put in waiver claims for these people just to make sure that you have them on your roster or one of the two on your roster. But I just don't know if they're going to come anywhere close to the production that you were expecting out of Johnson himself.
So what I'm going to do is, I mean, this isn't really helpful for you guys, but I mean, I have Jaquizz Rodgers at least this week and next, right? So I'm going to start, I'm up against you and I'm going to start him and maybe Bilal Powell. And if I beat you with those two guys, then I don't know, you owe me a beer or something.
I'm going to send you a case of Skyline chili. Or I'm going to send you a frozen Chicago style pizza. Actually, I think we should do that.
Okay.
We should say that this matchup this week, we have to send each other something. Here's what I would like. I would like you to send me some Rheingeist.
That's something that you like.
Yeah. If I win.
Oh.
No, if I lose, I will send you some Chicago brewery beer, Revolution or Half Acre or something like that. That's okay. Not the easiest thing in the world to get in Cincinnati.
Can you even do that?
I might have to do it in person at some point, but we'll see each other again.
Okay.
In the future.
I'll drive to Chicago and buy you a Cincinnati beer.
Yeah, exact. Perfect. I like it.
Sounds good.
Okay. So why don't we stick with running backs as we talk from there at some of the other players that we looked at. So I think that the big person that people are all abuzz about this week, Chris actually mentioned him earlier already, is Tariq Cohen from the Bears. Did you watch any of that game?
I did not.
So I, being the faithful-ish Bears fan that I am, I definitely watched most of it and was texting with a couple of friends during the game as I hung out with my son and tried to get him to enjoy football as early as possible. And he looked good. I mean, I'm not, you know, a tape analyst or anything like that, but it seemed like every time he got the ball, he definitely did something with it. You know, was productive, was making big gains. And then every time it seemed like they had a running play where something didn't happen, Jordan Howard, it turned out that it was Jordan Howard afterwards.
So is Tariq Cohen, is he one of these guys that kind of like stands out when he has the ball?
Like, I mean, to like my uneducated and unpracticed eye test, I would say yes, it seemed that way. What is interesting is that, he's a rookie, so the MathBox algorithm is actually kind of down on him as far as points per opportunity go on his own. But what is that at 0.67 points per opportunity? The thing that's interesting is that...
Is that in PPR?
That is in PPR.
Okay.
Yeah, PPR. All of the analysis that I did in the article I wrote is in PPR.
It's more fun to play in PPR anyway.
Well, I agree with that. And I actually, we could do a whole podcast about that some other time about how to set up a good league with your friends. But I think PPR is key to it just because, you know, you want to get casual people in to compete against your sharks. That always makes it more exciting when there's more points. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we projected going into the season that Cohen would have 0.67 points per opportunity, which is actually really similar to what we projected Kerwin Williams to be at, strangely enough, who we just talked about a minute ago. The thing that's really wild to me about this is that 0.67 points per opportunity is actually higher than where we projected Jordan Howard to be this year. So, you know, just going away, MathBox already liked Tariq Cohen better than Jordan Howard, even with the kind of rookie penalty that the algorithm sort of inflicts on young players.
And well, why don't you finish that point? And I want to make a point about how the model works.
Sure. Yeah. And so this is one of the players that I'm suggesting that we would adjust the point per opportunity a little bit. I'm just thinking that we should say Tariq Cohen is probably going to be closer to the average point per opportunity for a running back, which is 0.8 points per opportunity. Which is it's not a big change in points, but it is actually like, you know, it's like a 12%. Increase in the amount of production that we're expecting.
So when you combine that with his new opportunities per game, then what's the outcome there?
So the interesting thing is, I actually think the other thing that goes with that is that we already projected that he was going to have 16 opportunities per game in our initial projections. So it turns out that I actually think that we are probably correct on the opportunities per game, even with the kind of great debut that he had this week.
Sure.
And that we should just give a little bit more credit for points per opportunity. I think that what happens if you do that with the way that it works out then is that he comes out to an -3 average weekly value player, which is right around running back number 25 as well.
So that's, let's see, -3. That's like, kind of like a mid RB2, low RB2.
Yeah, exactly.
Range.
And I think the real problem is because when I was looking at the spreadsheet, there's no real reason for the Bears to go away from Jordan Howard quite yet. He didn't have a great game. He didn't have a terrible game. He's still kind of the lead star in the running game for the Bears, which I think is actually going to be used a lot because they, you know, their passing game kind of looks like a mess. But I just couldn't move Tariq Cohen past 16 opportunities a game, given that that's already a little bit high as far as running backs go, especially running backs that are basically number two in a timeshare.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not like Tariq Cohen and the Bears are in line with, I don't know, Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. Like, there's a week one bump that happens across the league. And for, you know, kind of mediocre teams or mediocre players, it might not last. For, you know, for the stars, it'll last. So I'm a little skeptical. I mean, obviously he's not going to maintain that level of performance throughout the year, I don't think, but I'm still a little skeptical. I would keep starting him if you need him, but I would just kind of keep an eye out, not, you know, maybe not start him in week eight if he doesn't keep it up.
Yeah, and I agree. Actually, I don't even know if I would start him in week two quite yet. I might give it another week. Like, it's definitely, I'm going to be looking at him to add to a lot of my teams because you always need running back depth, but I'm not rushing to plug him in and be like, this guy is the greatest ever. I just think that between the situation and the, like you said, that week one bump and sort of like statistical anomaly thing, I'm going to be just keeping an eye on it. So there's one more running back we want to talk about on the, as far as the waiver wire goes, before we move on to a different position. And that's Javorius Allen from the Baltimore Ravens. This one kind of surprised me because I didn't expect there to be kind of a lot to talk about with the Danny Woodhead injury. And also it seemed like the thing that was going to happen was basically Terrence West was going to just take over and get whatever kind of work there was to do there. But in the actual game, Allen had a pretty big increase in workload right after Woodhead was injured. And the thing that's really interesting about it is that we actually had him projected to be pretty high as far as points per opportunity went already. So if Javorius Allen is somebody who moves up a lot, moves up from, say, 8 opportunities a game to 16 opportunities a game, that puts the average weekly value to be negative 2.8, which puts him pretty squarely in RB2 territory. So I think this is particularly, again, this is one that I think is a big difference between standard and PPR. So if you're a PPR person, I think it's definitely worth taking a look at grabbing Allen as sort of a sneaky person who, maybe if you're at the end of your waiver wire claims, you know, maybe nobody in your league will be on top of this guy, but this is someone that you could grab towards the end of that and maybe get a real, really good find out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable assessment. I mean, the Ravens were up. I mean, how often are the Ravens going to be up 20 by two scores for an entire game? I mean, their offense is not that great. Their defense basically caused all those points. So, and I think they ran the ball over 40 times and passed it like 17 the entire game. So, I don't know. I think that's a reasonable assessment. He's maybe not a top waiver wire pickup, but definitely someone to target later in that waiver wire order.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting, though. I will say, of all the players that I analyzed this week, he was the one who I actually think had the most potential upside based on where he was rated by our algorithm already.
Yeah.
Yeah, so tough to say. It all depends on how much more work they get from here, but I do think that there's something to Javorius Allen in Baltimore.
So do you want to move on to wide receivers?
Yeah, I think let's just hop into wide receivers for a minute from here. So one of the other big injuries on this week was Allen Robinson of the Jaguars, unfortunately out for the season with an ACL. So it leaves us wondering who could step in to take over some of those targets from our boy Blake Bortles.
Well, yeah. just because from what I heard about that game, like, they were basically not letting Blake Bortles do much, basically running the ball most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all would rather watch those kind of football games where Blake Bortles is not throwing that much. So, I will say, out of the wide receivers that are there that a lot of people have been talking about picking up this week, Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee, I think both of them rank actually very, very low as far as points per opportunities go. And they both also really need something significant in bump in the opportunities targets kind of zone to be able to make any kind of impression. Right now, I think in the best case scenario, you know, Allen Hurns might make it up to a wide receiver 50 and Marquise Lee might make it up to a wide receiver number 45. Those are both bench players still. So I don't think that either one of them are players that if you use a waiver wire pick on, you're going to be starting anytime soon.
So you're not looking for any Jacksonville Jaguars receivers, I take it. I can't blame you for that. What about any other receivers this week?
So the other receiver that I'd be taking a look at this week, or the big one I'd be looking to add, is Nelson Agholor from the Philadelphia Eagles. He's an interesting guy. He's a guy that I've had on teams a bunch of times over the years, and he's really done nothing, so I always drop him. But you know, this week he had 86 yards and a TD on eight targets. I think that if he's available, I think he's actually the best add of the week, because he's an undervalued player on a team with a good offense already. The other thing is, he's a player who is sort of rare on the waiver wire, where he's an established player who has a path to targets and opportunities that has positive points per opportunities against his peers at his position. So basically what that means is that our model projects that he would get more points per opportunity than other wide receivers. The reason he didn't rank higher in our projections was because we didn't project him to have very many opportunities. So if he was to move from our initial projection of 7 opportunities a game to 8.5 opportunities a game, basically 8 some weeks and 9 some weeks, he would work his way into the top 30 at wide receiver, which I think is totally someone you should have on your radar for a PPR league.
Yeah, I could see that. And Carson Wentz is in his second year, so you got to imagine that offense is going to move a little more just in general. So seems like a solid pickup.
Yeah, I think he'd be really good. It might be finally the year for Nelson Agholor to show us kind of what made him a high draft pick when he came into the league.
Sure. So
one last wide receiver I want to talk about really quickly is the guy who I think probably everybody is going to be running out to grab this week, and that is Kenny Golladay from the Detroit Lions. Have you did you see that he caught 2 touchdowns from Matt Stafford and 7 targets on Sunday?
I did not.
Yeah, so this is somebody who I think everybody's talking about, and they're all like, "Oh, week one, you know, he's a young guy, and we're seeing great things for him, and he's going to be a person who really balances out Golden Tate and gives them another, you know, gives the Lions another weapon to use." I don't really, really buy it at all. He's projected at below kind of average versus other wide receivers in points per opportunity. He's actually, if we just look at rankings by points per opportunity, he is 70th among wide receivers. So I don't think that even if he gets a bunch more opportunities a game, it's going to take him a long time to catch up to everybody else and put him in a spot where he's going to be really producing at a level where you're even going to think about starting. My new projection for him, just based on adjusting his opportunities a little bit, was to put him at wide receiver number 55, basically next door to Tyler Lockett.
Dang. I feel like Tyler Lockett wasn't that bad in our projections this year, but I might just be making that up. So
there's a lot of wide receivers.
Okay. And I'm sure he's got a lot of talent, but I mean, he was drafted at the end of the third round this year, number 96 overall. I'm a little hesitant too, because it's the first week and it's his first game in the NFL. I have a feeling teams will maybe be able to adjust. Maybe if he was one of the top wide receivers in the draft, I'd say, you know, maybe they won't be able to adjust. Maybe this guy's so talented that, you know, he'll be able to overcome that. But yeah, I'd be a little hesitant too. I'm not forgetting about him yet, but
yeah, again, I think this is somebody that if you have space on your bench and you want to just stash somebody, it could be worth it to see what happens in Detroit. But this isn't somebody who's going to help you reliably right away, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. So what else you got?
All right. So the last person I want to talk about a little bit on the, you know, with regards to waiver wire this week is our friend and Patriot killer, Alex Smith of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Everyone's best friend.
Yeah. Everyone's best friend this week. One of Alex Smith has always been sort of my proxy for like, this is my streaming quarterback. Meet Alex Smith.
The most exciting quarterback.
Yes, exactly. The most exciting quarterback with the most exciting name. Here's what I think a little bit about Alex Smith. The thing that's interesting about him, I think, as a waiver wire ad is that we had him as quarterback number 19 overall, according to kind of the Fantasy Outliers math box projection system. But if you sort by points per opportunity, we had him at number 5.
So that really stands out to me. I mean, that's one of the things about draft strategy where you kind of have to keep in mind, especially towards the end of the draft, where, you know, sometimes maybe draft for points per opportunity. I know it's a little after the fact there, but this is exactly why.
Well, it's also a good way to work the waiver wire, right? Like look for those people who are floating around.
Yeah. So go ahead. So I assume you're going to suggest that his opportunities per game are going to go up.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, the sort of narrative from just listening to other podcasts and kind of fantasy wrap up from this week is that they let him kind of get a little bit loose this year and throw, you know, this game, maybe it presages something of what's going to happen this year where he's, you know, going to throw to Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt is going to be in there and really help, you know, help take some pressure off of Alex Smith and maybe give him some more opportunities to be, you know, the great, quarterback that we all knew he could always be. You know, the thing is it only takes 4 more opportunities per game to move him up from quarterback 19 to Derek Carr territory, which I think is quarterback 10.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you want to necessarily, you know, you don't want to be starting quarterback 10 every week, but if you can play the matchups with quarterbacks and find the bad defenses where, you know, a guy like this can do some work for you and you're maybe working back and forth with him and somebody else, like maybe even Derek Carr, for example, you know, if you pick up Alex Smith off the waiver wire, it might be a pretty good tandem for people who are looking to stream quarterbacks.
Yeah. And, maybe that's a good segue to our next, portion of the podcast where say you have 2 quarterbacks on your team, and one's at home and one's away.
Yeah.
Given about equal-ish matchups, what do you think the average points differences will be between the 2 quarterbacks?
Well, I think that if you believe what you hear from other people in fantasy and sports analysis, it depends on who the player is and whether they have a proclivity for scoring more at home and away. Or some guys are real road warriors, you know, and they score more on the road than they do at home. What Chris is kind of setting up here is that we did a little bit of analysis about the kind of big myth of home versus away splits in fantasy football to try and track them, quantify them, so that it's something that everybody can talk about with some understanding of what they actually are.
Yeah, right. So we looked at, let's see, between 1,400 and 3,000 data points, depending on the position, standard and PPR leagues in 10-team leagues. And we did for 8 and 12 teams too, but we're just reporting on 10-team leagues. And what just like kind of looked at the average point differences just at an aggregate level, bird's eye view of home versus away. And we actually found that there's differences in all positions, except pretty much it's about the same for wide receivers, right.
Super weird.
Super weird. Yeah. Right.
So just to like put a, I don't know what they say, hang a lantern on what Chris just said. Guess what? We went back and looked. Somebody actually went back and looked, and we confirmed that there is a difference between home and away. Players do score more in home games versus away games in general. They do. It is a fact.
So if you have Alex Smith and Derek Carr in your lineup or on your team, and one's at home, one's away, you would expect about a plus 1 point difference for the guy who's at home. So if all is equal, maybe go with, you know, Alex Smith if he's at home, or Derek Carr. It just, you know, if everything's equal, obviously. Yeah.
I think that's the tricky thing about this finding, right, yeah. Is that, you called it actionability when we were talking about this before we got on the podcast. And I think that is tricky, but there will be situations where people are trying to make decisions where they really feel like it's a coin flip. And I think in those cases, home and away is enough to choose the home person in most cases, if, like you said, the talent level is the same. In particular, the players that this is going to happen with a lot, you know, from my experience, at least the way that I draft and tend to play fantasy football, is defense and quarterback. And as it turns out, defense and quarterback are the two positions that have the biggest differences between their home and away performances.
Which kind of makes sense, right? Because the QB is basically the offense, except for, I guess, running backs. And the defense as a whole, because I feel like the home field advantage, I mean, it makes sense, right? If they're louder, they mess up the other offense a lot more than they improve the home field offense. So we see a 21% increase in defense and special team performance at home on average.
Right. Which is
1.3
crazy.
3 points.
Yeah, basically, we imagine people, away defenses score about a plus six, right?
Mm-hmm. 6.
Or is it total? It's 6.2 points scored. And we see that home defenses score closer to 8.
7.5.
Right.
So that's a plus 1.3 points, which, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, that those points add up. An extra point and a half can net you a plus 1-2% chance of winning, which, you know, it's significant, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially if you really are looking at kind of our projections for people's average weekly values, the difference between a good defense and a totally average defense is really only about 2 points per play per week, per player per week, right? On defense in particular. So that's enough to have someone go from totally league average in line with everybody else to gaining you a significant advantage at that position. It's a little bit less pronounced, like Chris was saying, at running back, tight end, and kicker, and it's not pronounced at all at wide receiver. So it's a little bit harder to find yourself in situations where that margin of difference in talent is going to be thin enough where you should choose the home person versus the away person just because of that reason. But I still think it's interesting to know.
So this is let's take a step back. This is a bird's eye view. So I think there might be, it's including some people who had low start percentages in this analysis. So I'm looking more at the percent differences between home and away versus the point differences. And I'm seeing, even if it's a small raw difference, it's about a plus 10% bump for QBs, RBs, and tight ends. So, I mean, if you say that holds up, I mean, we should do a follow up on this where we look at star performers and how that holds up over time. But let's assume for now that those percentages hold up for your RB1 who scores 20 points on average per week. So that's plus 2, right? So
right.
I think that's.
I guess that's true. But for me, it's more that you're not often going to have a choice between. I mean, maybe I will this week, for example. Like if we look at one of the rosters that I have right here, like in front of me, I have to decide for 2 running back slots. I have to pick between Mark Ingram, Carlos Hyde, and Bilal Powell. Okay, so my question when I look at those kind of matchups becomes, am I more worried about the defense that they're facing, or am I more worried about the fact that they're home or away in that situation? Because, you know, that percentage difference, I don't know which one is actually more impactful.
Well, it might depend on the situation, right? Like, I think, so our overall mission here, or our overall vision, is that we combine these metrics with sort of that human intuition and expert knowledge to get better decisions in the end. So what I would do with these is you take a running back, and say they, his, like the storyline is for their home, say they're a running back for the Seahawks, you'd maybe assume that that home field advantage is maybe a little more significant there, right? Combine the numbers with the human narrative. Whereas if they're playing like a really good defense, you'd maybe assume that that defense was a little more impactful. You know, that's actually a good point. We should maybe follow up on and do some analysis on that.
On defenses. Yeah, I think that's a more complicated one that people would definitely be interested in. But it is funny that I was just saying, you know, I don't know if I'll ever be in a situation where I have to make a decision based on this. And right now I'm looking at Yahoo, and Yahoo says Mark Ingram is projected to have 9.6 points, right? And Bilal Powell is projected to have 10.7 points at Oakland, while Mark Ingram is versus New England at home. I mean, I'm probably going to start Mark Ingram over Bilal Powell in that context, mostly because of what we just talked about here. So, yeah, I mean, New England's a better matchup defense-wise as well, but also he's at home. So I think maybe it's worth a shot.
Yeah, so there you go. Like, we look at these numbers, they seem small, like it's a 0.7 point difference on average. But just think of how many times you've gone crazy on Sunday morning. I mean, not that I need a therapist or anything, but just think about the number of times you've gone
crazy. The number of times you've been racked with indecision. Is that what you're trying to say? Yeah.
I mean, even if it's wrong, you just want something to tell you what to do sometimes.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, you're winning me over with this a little bit, because I was kind of skeptical when I saw the numbers for everything else as far as it being actionable. But if it's just another ingredient that I'm putting in like the stew that is decision making, and I can say, yeah, there's a 10% margin of difference. Do I think the defense is going to account for more or less than that? Do I think that these projections are close enough where I'm going to start worrying about that kind of, not that I love anybody's site projections on a weekly basis, but you know, do I feel like these players are close enough? They're next to each other in expert consensus rankings that I'm looking at or something like that. Is that enough to bump them forward or not? I think it's interesting.
I mean, that's why I like you, Dave, because you're kind of the skeptic, right? I mean, you're not a data scientist. You're like, I've been playing fantasy football for decades or fantasy sports for decades. Like,
right.
You know, so, and it's kind of, I think your point of view is probably similar to what maybe a lot of our listeners have. So,
I am the everyman. That's what I strive to be.
And I'm the geek who has, no way of connecting with the common folk.
Right. Well, that's why I'm here.
Exactly. You're the common folk, and I'm
right. You're King Geek.
Yeah. I don't know. That's stupid. King Geek. Is that my nickname now?
Yeah. You just got nicknamed. So, I mean, I think this article is great. If you want to take a look at the figures a little bit more closely, you know, the tables and charts and all the beautiful stuff that we do on Fantasy Outliers, it's called Point Differentials in Home versus Away Fantasy Performances. It's a really sassy title. Maybe we should think about changing that a little bit to something a little more engaging. But, I think that it's good to just look at this and see. I will say that the data that we share actually has pretty high counts for home performances and away performances. They're all well into the thousands. So it feels like we should have plenty of confidence in the fact that this home away thing,
100%.
99 or 100% confidence in the fact that this split does in fact exist.
Yep. And this is, again, a bird's eye view. There's some low score. There's a fair amount of players with low start percentages in here. We're definitely going to do some follow-up and kind of drill down as far as like top performers or individual players or teams in the coming weeks. So stay tuned. I just want to mention that the author of this article is someone that we forgot to mention before.
I think we talked about Clay on the podcast last week, didn't we?
Yeah, well, we forgot to mention him in this segment. This is his article.
Oh, okay.
This is Clay Seal's article.
Yeah.
Clay J. Seal, at Clay J. Seal at medium.com.
Clay J. It Clay rhymes. J. Yeah.
That's the letter J, not the name J.
Right, right. So, yeah, this is Seal number 3's article, and it's a good one. I think it's worth reading. I definitely learned something from it. So that'll do it for week 2 from Fantasy Outliers, the podcast. Hopefully your waiver wire claims work out this week, and we gave you a little bit of illumination on how to go after there. And hopefully you get all the home field advantage that you deserve.
Stay at home, guys and girls. You'll score more points.
Always stay at home. No, don't leave your house. So if you could, you know, if you disagree with what we've said, if you agree with what we've said, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, send us an email at podcast@fantasyoutliers.com. You could reach out to us via leaving a rating or a review on iTunes for this podcast. That would be super helpful as well. And signing off for this week, this
only
is Dave.
Only good ones.
Yeah, only good ones. Please, actually, we'll just take any of them. Just we'd love to get some feedback. So please shoot us a note if you have any. So signing off, this is Dave.
This is Chris.
And we will talk to you guys next week. Thanks.
Cheers.